Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 3:21 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is August 17th. I thought we'd kick off with this graphic I found on Bloomberg, which I thought was particularly interesting because there's been a correlation between the bigger declines we've seen over the last 3 months with option expiries and the most recent vintage of options on the S&P, for example, will expire on Friday. So we've had some volatility creep in over the last few days, but there's also been a tendency to go in and buy the dip intraday. So we saw that again in here today. So it's certainly a difficult environment to be short. When we look at the size of the declines we've seen since October, none have been greater than 5%. And even the number of days where the market has fallen more than 1% is way down on last year. By the time we got to around this time of the year last year, it was upwards of 120 days where we'd had a 1% move in the market. And this year it's only about 40. So certainly we've had a less volatile environment overall. And then we continue to see this process of dip buying. So even though we've got option expiry coming up on Friday and we've had these occasional bouts of volatility heading into option expiry over the last three vintages expiring, then we still don't have a lot of evidence to suggest that investors are willing to give up on this upward trend just yet. So we would have to see downside follow through. And more importantly, we'd have to see not just the market close towards the low of the day, but also follow through on the downside. And even then, the succession of higher reaction lows remains very much in place. So we'd have to see the market coming back below 4,230 in order to really begin to suggest that this is a peak of more than very short-term significance. Nonetheless, it's not like there aren't challenges that are abounding right now. So we can, I was at a wholesale market today, and one thing that I thought was particularly interesting is that they were way behind on their sales target, and that some of the people working there said very clearly that they'd been run off their feet in the first and second quarters. They were having difficulty keeping up with orders, and they were exceeding their target with ease and even multiplying it. Now they're at less than half their target and we're more than halfway through the month, and that was a minimum target to begin with. So there's certainly been an impact in terms of demand from consumers. At the same time, we have evidence of increasing demand for credit. So people, once one experiences any degree of living standard inflation, then it's, it's quite difficult to then pull one's wings back. So I think this is what a lot of people are experiencing. They became flush with cash during the pandemic because of the outsized stimulus and unemployment checks that they were receiving, and they went on a spending spree. Now that those have expired, then people are turning instead to their credit cards, and that's creating demand for credit. And it's particularly beneficial for companies like Capital One. They had an acute shortage of liquidity last year. They don't have nearly the same problem this year. The share has been up in an extremely dynamic manner, and it's still trending higher. So there's obviously a significant reversal in their fortunes, and there's plenty of demand for credit in their products right now, and the financial sector overall is a pretty similar analog for that performance on Capital One, and it's still right in the region of its peaks. So there's plenty of demand for credit, but at the same time there is a reticence of many people to go back to work. And then on top of that good news, we have the impact that's being felt now from fear of the Delta variant. So parties are being cancelled, conferences are being cancelled, more people are staying at home, and they don't want to take jobs that are client-facing. and mask mandates are cropping up all over the place. And then there are, and then of course in Europe we have the whole question of vaccine passports, and then places, an increasingly large number of places demanding evidence of vaccination before admittance. All of these types of factors are not exactly beneficial for consumer sentiment. So when we start to put all of that together, we are looking still at an inflationary environment. Prices continue to rise, and the Baltic Dry Index is still in on an uptrend. It's clearly broken out of this base formation that has been forming for most of the last decade. We are at new highs that haven't been seen since the way down from the bubble peak, all the way back in 20 or 2009 and 10. So this is still an environment where upward prices on or pressure on prices seems to be inevitable, particularly for imported goods. At the same time, the supply of credit is still rising because there's demand for it, but then of course there are going to be other people that will simply refuse to spend if they don't have the money, and it's likely to contribute to a slowdown in consumption. And that suggests that while the second quarter was very impressive in terms of earnings, the third quarter might surprise on the downside. Well, if we have lower growth and inflation, that's stagflation. So that is certainly something that is a potential outcome from everything that's going on right now. And then we can think about 10-year treasury yields. Well, we can clearly see that there was a sequence of lower rally highs. There were a sequence of ranges, one below the last. Then we had this rally from the beginning of August, which broke the sequence of lower rally highs, and it pushed up into the overhead trading range. So the downtrend's been broken, and now the question is this a higher reaction low? And I think it's possible that that is the case. So if that's the case, then we have to, I think, give some consideration to the potential that yields are going to start backing up. Well, there are, of course, two arguments for, I guess there are opposing arguments for why that might happen. The first is that in the event that the stock market does, in fact, eventually pull back, then the Federal Reserve will likely intervene and start buying bonds at a faster clip, and that would help to compress yields. And or there is, and I guess there's an additional argument to support the compression in yields, and that's the difficulties that are currently being experienced in China. And I'll talk more about that in a moment. But then, if we're thinking about why yields should rise, well, it's potentially because there will be more supply. So the federal government will fast forward their plans for additional stimulative measures and get that money moving into the system as quick as they can in the event that we do see a significant drop off in growth. So simply just by virtue of the fact that there are more bonds, then yields should rise. And of course, then there's the pressure that might come to bear on inflation. Because right now, investors are willing to give the benefit of the doubt to the fact that inflation is transitory, but perhaps it isn't, or that transitory could mean a few years instead of a few months. So, all of those other factors aside, this looks like a bullish chart. It looks like the yield is going to rise from here. So, we can then start to set aside some of the other arguments and simply look at the chart, and it looks like a bullish chart. We can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside, provided the 1.2% level holds. Then let's think about what's going on in China, because this is one thing that I find particularly interesting, that This chart does not look bullish. I think that's an understatement. We had the very significant downward dynamics in the early part of the year, and then it has dropped in a dynamic manner below the trend mean, and it is pulling back from it again in here today. So this looks like a failed break above the 5500 level, a period of right-hand extension, and now it is resuming the downtrend. So it's looking increasingly likely that China's market has topped, and it's at least a medium-term peak. It could potentially be more than a medium-term peak. When we then look at the I guess the higher leverage portion of the market, the Chinext index, well, that is also looking like a failed break and pulling back into the underlying range. It is still holding the sequence of higher reaction lows. It has not yet broken below the trend mean, so we haven't had quite the same extent of demand destruction in this market as we've had in the wider large cap sector. But at the same time, it has a lot to prove, and we're going to need to see a very clear upper dynamic in order to confirm a return to demand dominance. Then the H share index in Hong Kong, or the China Enterprises Index, is right back on the lower side of its range and coming back in a dynamic manner. And this is an index which has been ranging now for 12 years. So every single time it has looked like it was going to do better, it has failed. And this is, I think, indicative of the fate of Chinese companies, that they are capable of having short-term bouts of extraordinary performance and then fail. And I think that's particularly relevant when we think about the performance of Tencent, for example. Because it was back in September of 2019 that the Chinese government announced that they were going to install party discipline enforcers into the head offices of more than 100 large of the largest corporations in China. And at the time, that was viewed as an acceleration of the party's taking over of the corporate sector. Now we see today that the Communist Party has installed a party enforcer onto the board of ByteDance. So that obviously is a further amplification of the party's taking over of the corporate sector. Now, what I was talking about nearly 2 years ago was that the whole pattern of taking over the South China Sea and making land claims was very akin to the Nazi Party's Lebensraum and their annexation of the Sudetenland. Well, then we can think about what was the role of corporations within the Nazi administration. Well, it was that they were tolerated, and private enterprise was tolerated only to such an extent that it furthered the aims of the party. And then we can just simply translate that into what's going on in China today, and it's not all that different. So what we are in fact being presented with is the increasing authoritarian and fascist way of organizing a major economy, which is what's going on in China today. Now, obviously, Tencent went up a lot after September of 2019, but it's almost back to where it was before that original bout of fear about exactly what the imposition of disciplinary officials into various companies was going to have. I think the market is really now only beginning to wake up to what's going on in China. So it has the potential to be a material impact on economic growth, because When you manage an economy based upon political idealism rather than allowing companies to pursue a profit motivation, well, then they're no longer being run for the interests of shareholders. And if the interests of shareholders are not being looked after, well, then how could we rationally anticipate that their shares would perform well? So I would anticipate that if we're thinking about China, then we're going to get a lot of volatility. We're going to have occasions when the administration decides that the selling pressure has gone too far and that they need to start making nice with the market so that there will be some calming measures, and they will instruct sovereign wealth funds to go in and buy the shares, and we'll see bounces. And then they will go too far, and we'll see the exact same government turn around and say, well, these companies need to be brought to heel. So that's a very volatile environment in which to exist, and it's extraordinarily difficult for investors to exist within that kind of reality. So that's why I'm very much of the belief that China is a trader's market. And of course, then we have the bigger existential problems like China Evergrande, because the share is not rallying. Now, we had a pop on the upside last week because they were able to line up some credit, and they have been attempting to sell off assets, but the share was down in a dynamic manner again in here today. We're right back on the lows from back in 2017, and there is the real potential that this is going to cause some pressure in the wider emerging market bond portfolio. Then when we can think about the emerging markets ETF for stocks, well, it also broke downwards in here today. China represents about a third of the emerging markets ETF. So if it pulls back, well, then it takes the rest of the emerging markets universe with it. When we think about the emerging markets ex-China index, and definitely need to type it correctly, and I haven't succeeded yet. There we go. Well, the MSCI Emerging Markets ex-China ETF is still above its trend mean, but it has lost some momentum and coming back into the region of the trend mean. So it's certainly being supported by markets like India and Vietnam, and these are some of the leaders and certainly among the countries that will benefit from the increasing isolation that China is likely to experience. Of course, eventually Taiwan is going to become an issue, and just how deep a process of correction the mainland China experiences, well, that's only going to increase the nationalist fervor to go off and engage in adventurism in Taiwan. Now, the stock market there is pulling back, having failed to sustain the breakout to new all-time highs and coming back into the region of the trend mean. When we think about the semiconductors index, it's also again failed to sustain its upward break, and it's coming back into the range. This is potentially a type 2 top formation. So one of the characteristics of a type 2 top is a loss of momentum. So we've certainly seen that. And then when we see failed upside breaks, well, it suggests that there is plenty of supply above the range. And then the big question is whether so that also tells us that the vacuum of supply above the range has not formed. And it begs the question whether the vacuum of demand below the market has formed. So now the question is whether the SOX is going to hold that 3,000 level. We can also think about where stops are, and I think there will be a lot of stops in the region of about 2950. So We're at, I think, a rather tenuous environment overall, because we have evidence of slowdown in the USA, we have evidence of inflationary pressures, and then we also have these rather large questions about China. And the big question 3, even 4 years ago about China, as Xi Jinping attempted to reorient the economy, was whether they could engineer a soft landing or whether they would end up with a hard landing. Well, so far they haven't really had any landing. But the question now, as we come out of the pandemic, or I guess it's not even as we come out of the pandemic, but as we endure through the pandemic, is will China be able to survive without experiencing a hard landing? Because China Evergrande is obviously dependent on liquidity. And it has fingers in an awful lot of pots. And it's not the only property developer that's likely to come under pressure. So it's really a question of how willing will the administration be to increase leverage? How willing will they be to continue to support the leverage in the financial system? And they may think that from a political perspective, they might be better off in trying to gain control rather than trying to unwind some of this leverage and cause the least possible pain to asset prices. So we're at a rather interesting juncture here with relation to China and the wider global economy. And then we can think about the commodity complex as well. Because oil prices are still around the $70 area, but looking a little softer. And this wasn't a dynamic move in here today. But I think it's worth keeping an eye on markets like palladium, because palladium has been the supply inelasticity market over the course of the last 5 years. And the price has gone from 500 to 3,000. It's now back at 2,500. It's below the trend mean. The last time it was at this area, about 3 months ago, well, it bounced in a really dynamic manner. And now the question is, will it bounce here? The primary reason why palladium has done so well is because car companies are increasingly getting prepared to produce electric vehicles. So, in normal circumstances, when this price advanced, then they would have retooled and redeployed into platinum demand. They didn't do that on this occasion because they don't anticipate investing any additional money in the manufacturing process for internal combustion engines. So while demand for internal combustion engines proceeds, then there'll be demand for palladium and catalytic converters and less real threat from substitution. Of course, if there's less demand for cars because the global expansion is moderating, well, then that will hit demand for palladium. So, and of course, it would also hit demand for oil. So I think it is particularly important to pay attention to what's going on in palladium because it will help to give perhaps a lead indicator to what we might anticipate from the oil price. And of course, then we have the natural gas price, which is in short supply right now, and there are low supplies for the winter season, but the price right now is at the upper side of the range. And at $4, it's at a region where it has failed to sustain moves above this level for on multiple occasions. So it's quite likely that we are going to have at least some pause of consolidation in here. And of course, the other big potential lightning rod for speculation is copper. And copper prices have been weak over the course of the last few months. This is a loss of momentum. And we have a lower high. Now, I've been of the view, and I remain of the view, that copper is likely to be in a secular bull market. But we've had a spectacular advance up off the lows in 2020. And we also had a phenomenal advance up off the lows in 2008. And that lasted for a good long time. And in between, we had a pretty big consolidation within the first year. And then it translated into an additional pop on the upside into 2010 and 11. So, as we assess, how willing will the governments of the world be to, in fact, follow through on their plans for decarbonization versus just talking about it? I think the market is at a point now where they need to see some, in fact, real spending plans, because there is a strike in Chile right now, and they want more money. And generally, when you get a strike in the world's largest producer of the metal, one might anticipate that prices would rise, and yet prices are falling. So investors right now are more concerned about growth prospects in China and growth prospects for the rest of the world. So I think we are moving progressively towards a more risk-off environment, despite the fact that Wall Street indices continue to bounce on an intraday basis. I think this is an increasingly more risky environment. And then gold prices have rebounded in a very emphatic fashion. But they were a little weaker in here today and pausing around the $1,800 area. This is the region of the trend mean. We've unwound just about, or we've around a good portion of the very short term oversold condition. So it wouldn't be surprising if we saw a little consolidation now. And of course, the most important point will be will the low hold at $1,700? I think that there's a fighting chance that that will be the case, and stagflation is the kind of environment that could be potentially very beneficial for gold prices overall. Then I'm continuing to watch Bitcoin rather closely. The price is hovering here around the $45,000 level. And having been up in early trading, we're at the lower side of the range right now. And so far, this range is relatively similar to the one posted in late July and early August. So I don't think there is quite the rationale for panicking at the present moment, but it's certainly a price structure that needs watching, because I'll be willing to hold on as long as it's consistent. But as soon as there's a threat that it turns inconsistent, well, I'll be gone. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.